now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
And we're back.
It seems like just yesterday.
Did you know God is a drag queen?
I did not know that.
We'll clear it up as we chat to Mike Delamont.
Well, I hope so.
Plus,
1857, the Indian Uprising becomes a musical comedy.
We chat to Niall Morjani to clear that one up as well.
All right, here in the next hour on Shout Out.
Oh, there's no one going to do it.
Oh, I thought...
Such professionalism.
Yeah, you let me down, all of you. See, it goes silent and you were all fast asleep.
They were very, very busy doing some last-minute edits.
Yes, were you?
We're all busy all the time here, right up
just
to the
just so professional, guys.
Checking your spelling, eh?
Absolutely. Just right up to the point we go on the air.
Of course. So much in the news coming out of the States. Looks as though the fight is still on over there with trans people trying to rid trans youth of healthcare. Still problems over here, of course, in that the new clinics haven't even got a proper start-up. It seems that the people that are manning, inverted commas, the clinics, or peopling, haven't really got enough experience. So
indeed.
It's, yeah.
On the plus side, that Budapest Pride in Hungary attracted over 220,000 people, making it one of the largest demonstrations that Budapest has seen in recent decades, and all in favour of LGBTQIA plus freedom, because the state government there, which is a bit of a rogue state within the European Union, is incredibly right-wing and ruled by a strong man called Viktor Orban. They attempted to ban Pride completely. And thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people came out to show their defiance. So that's a little bit of positive news.
Indeed, indeed. And it was, I saw the photos. Did you see the photos?
All across that bridge.
Yeah, between Buda and Pest.
Pest, yeah.
Yeah, or Pest. Is it pronounced Pest, I think?
It's Pest, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some good stuff going on. And some of the EU folks from the Commission and Parliament went over as well. So just to goad Orban.
Yeah, sure.
Which is a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. In our book, it is.
Yeah, so the battle's still gone. We got some great interviews coming up. Some real one that's quite off the wall, as we asked in the intro. Is God a Scottish drag queen?
Well, I would like to say, as somebody who did not grow up in the church and joined the church, then left the church, yes.
Yes.
God is a drag queen.
Really?
Yeah, it's my official statement.
Specifically Scottish? Or?
Well, so
very,
it says.
Very, very Scottish. God is like, right, you know what? We've got things to do.
I transcended to the gates I saw the boat.
Right. And you're here? And we will make decisions. That was at the gates, by
I
the
think
way.
Before the Scottish actually sue us, and especially if Tara's listening, we better move
Tara
on.
Tara likes my Scottish accent.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Now, who knew that God is actually a Scottish drag queen? Now, to tell us all... And I mean all. Mike Delamont has joined us at Shout Out. Welcome, Mike.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, before we get into the fact that God is actually a Scottish drag queen, can we go back to when you were growing up and how you got into theatre? Were you always in school shows and showing off in front of the family?
I certainly was a kid that acted out. You know, I was a chatty kid that always I think once people figured out that they could channel that into theater or something somewhat useful, people really suggested that I start doing plays and such. And I started with sketch comedy and musicals and it was a lovely start. I grew up, I think, as most folks certainly in the UK and Canada did, you know, with the Rowan Atkinson and Monty Python, Fry and Laurie, you know, Blackadder, of course. Well, I guess that's Rowan Atkinson too, but so heavily influenced of a whole lot of nonsense. So it was nice to find a world that I fit in, which I think is key. But yeah, started with sketch comedy and then went into stand-up and then started doing one-man shows, which I certainly never thought I would be doing, but here we are, you know, 20 years later, and it's nobody's figured me out yet, so.
Okay, now you're coming to London, Leicester yes. Square, but before we get into where it is, tell us what it is.
Oh, goodness. So the show is, it's God is the Scottish Drag Queen, and it's God coming down to set the record straight and correct a few things and expound on kind of everything from the, you know, Star Wars into Adam and Eve. It really runs the gamut. And so it started as a sketch. 2006, it started as a sketch, so I've been playing the character for almost 20 years, and then 2015 is when it became its first big two-act show, and now it's five unique two-hour shows. It's a full series of shows, and it's given me a chance to talk a lot about religion and everything through the eyes of a pretty foul-mouthed Irish Nan.
lovely. Don't the Brits just love foul mouth in panto and that, you know, it gets really edgy. Now you alluded to two of you. So is that, have you got two of you doing this show?
So I create the show with my wife directs the show, and we write it together. So we've built it from a little sketch show into something substantial. And so it's been a great journey to go on, which has been very exciting. I never thought that this would be my life. And now here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have to do many changes? Does it take you very long to get ready? And then is there multiple changes throughout the show?
I do a change for I have an outfit for the first act and the second act. And so it doesn't take me very long. And the idea for the character it's not a drag show in, you know, the current usual sense of what a drag show is, but the inspiration for the character came from the Sistine Chapel, which is the most famous depiction of the Judeo-Christian God. And we were looking at it one day, and he, when you look at God, he's wearing kind of a gentle pink frock. It looks, you know, it looks like a nightgown. It looks like something you stole out of your, you know, your mom's closet. It's a very feminine garb. But he looks so angry. So the idea of this angry, powerful man in this kind of flowing pink frock, I thought it was the juxtaposition of that was really interesting to me. And so it made it obvious that if we're going to do that, we had to do something a little more feminine and a little, but so we went the route of, I call them power suits. And the first one was a thrifted power suit. And I'm a very tall, I'm a big fella. I'm 6'7", I'm 200 centimeters. And so I got it at a thrift store. I don't know where that lady is now, but she was a big gal. So since then they have all been bespoke and custom made, but yeah, that first one was a nice thrift find, and I still have it, but I'd be hesitant to wear it. I think it's pretty threadbare at this point, but it started that's how it came about, is just the depiction of God in the Sistine Chapel. So it's taken us a long way from Michelangelo to the world of drag queens, which has been great.
You said about it looks quite feminine, and yet clothes are a social construct, basically, of how we are male and female. But through the ages, over the last 2,000-3,000 years, men have worn skirts, men have worn makeup, men have worn wigs, women have worn trousers, they've gone off to war. So in history, humanity has shown quite a mix-up. So it's only currently, and over the last, 300-400 years, where outfits seem to have become gendered, where a Absolutely. Man is expected to wear such and such and a woman expected to wear something else. What's your take on that?
That's a fairly large part of the first act of the show is the discussion of what is feminine and what is male. You know, the Roman soldiers conquered half the world in a pleated skirt. So, you know, what is masculine? You know, Greeks wore togas, Scottish men wear kilts, you know. So when we think of the most iconically, traditionally masculine cultures, they were quite effeminately dressed. So the discussion is, do the clothes make you who you are? You know, what is the shell? And it is what you choose, I think. So that is certainly a big part of the show and how it is, you know, until very recently, you know, a woman wearing trousers. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Call the church. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I do love the freedom that we have found now. So it's been quite an evolution.
Yeah, well, it's not full freedom yet, and I think the planet to be going backwards at a fair rate of knots currently. So shows like yours, I think, are quite important to, you know, to get it out there and make people question their main thought process on how they see genders and sexuality.
Well, and something we've encountered is that a lot of people have a very complicated relationship with the church. I didn't grow up in church. I don't have a religious background. I do now just because of the pure study. And I didn't think I'd ever read the Bible, and I've read it many, many, many times now. But I think people really struggle. Certainly people in the queer community struggle with that, want to have faith in their life and live an honest existence, trying to find that relationship between religion and who they truly are. And I think something unexpected for me is that we found that there is an audience that having the God in the show say that you're okay and you're safe and you're exactly where you're supposed to be and who you are is a real breakthrough for people that have a bit of religious trauma and that upbringing. So it's an unexpected, beautiful silver lining of the show. We had a show in very rural Canada, and a man came to the show, and after the show, he shared that his child is trans, and he shared with me that he didn't understand why they would be that way. And he made it very, very clear, and you could tell because the child was there, they're 12 years old. You could tell that whatever the pronouns were, whatever, he was with that child. That was their child. He was in their corner. He was very supportive. He just didn't understand why. And he said that during the show, he had his aha moment. He realized why somebody would want to make that change, or somebody would need to make that change. And that was 10 years ago. I can remember like it was yesterday. And I said, the moment after it happened, I said, if we never get to do another show ever again, I'm happy. That's great that we got to have this one moment with this one rural, small town dad and his child, that we could, that's it. It doesn't matter what the show does. If there's any success after that, that's the top. You can't get that from anything else. So there have been a lot of unexpected, beautiful moments taking this show around. And so, I think it's a bit of a balm as well for people that are hurting, especially in this current world and its ever-changing landscape. But for folks that lean left, this is certainly the show for them. So, you know, folks that enjoy Tim Minchin or Randy Feltface or any of those sort of left-leaning, let's, you know, talk very bluntly about things. It's provided a nice opportunity.
Yeah. Mike, that's very, very profound, isn't it? Where you move forward in the world one person at a time. And it is very special when you help one person. And like you said, the rest of it didn't really matter because you were so satisfied by helping that one person. And I think if we all did that, all of us, and gave people the facts and a little bit of a leg up, I think the world would be a much better place.
I think so too. It's all about providing a safe space, and we get a lot of blowback, hatred, you know, from the title of the show. The funny thing is it splits the audience down the middle, really, because there are people who are very devoutly religious who just seeing the title ruffles their feathers and they clutch their pearls. And then on the other end, you have clergy that go, well, what is this? And so we have a lot of, you know, local pastors, priests, nuns that come to the show, I think, out of pure curiosity. And the show is biblically sound. You know, I tell people that God isn't the punchline. God is the comedian. So the joke isn't ha 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 Christianity. It's, well, that doesn't make much sense. You know, it's looking at the Bible in another way. I have my wife's aunt was she was a missionary in their church for many, many years, and she came to see the show. I was very curious to see what her reaction would be, having been very much involved in the church. And I looked down midway through the first half and she's just dying laughing because she'd heard all these stories, but she never looked at them through that lens. And so I think, much like Shrek or, you know, children's cartoons, people get it at a certain level, but then those who have been to Sunday school or church or raised religious, they have an entire different level of enjoyment out of it that maybe others won't get, or knowing what the end of the story is, you know, to go, oh yeah, I remember that story of Abraham. I know what happens at the end of this one. So it's fascinating to see the audiences and how some very upset about it and some, you know, give it a chance and have a lovely time. So,
right, Mike, we're running fast out of time. I'd like to chat to you for a lot longer, actually, because it is a subject where a lot of people do need a little bit of help. And there are a lot of queer people, as we know through the show and over the 15 years that we've been broadcasting this, who do get confused, do want a religion in their life, whether that's Islam or Christianity, whatever. But if they're queer, they always feel like an outlier to that, despite their beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I think plays like yours, theatre productions, are so, so important just to make people question it.
And we kept we've talked about maybe we change the title to, you know, not be as scary to the regular folks. But I like that the title lets folks in this community know that you're safe here. Come, you know, you will not be a punchline. You will not be made fun of. It's a lovely, supportive place. So if we lose a couple of seats for that, but we get to provide a safe opportunity for folks, I think that's, I'm willing to take that.
Right. Now you've got people who are listening, queuing up now to get tickets. How do they get tickets, and when and where is the theatre production?
We're in London. We're in London the 28th of July at Leicester Square Theatre. So they can go to leicestersquaretheatre.com or mikedelamont.com. It'll take you to the exact same page, and tickets are online right now. So I think they're £20, something like that. So.
Okay. Sounds worth every penny, Mike. Social media, so people can follow you for your next production or where you end up next performing this.
Instagram is the Mike Delamont, and everything else is just at Mike Delamont. So it's all very simple. I'm a quick Google away.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike, for joining us here on Shout Out. More power to your elbow, my love, and break a leg.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me.
Very welcome.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Come on, get off the table now, Terry. You've had your bop. You've got to read the news now. I'm impressed that you're not out of breath.
You know, I'm the picture of fitness, me, you know that.
Yeah, you are. You ready?
Ready. This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
The LGBT community in Bristol are mourning the passing of... Sorry, let me start that again. The LGBT plus community in Bristol are this week mourning the passing scene of Stalbert, community activist and drug rehabilitation worker Michael Warner, who passed on to the realm of our LGBTQ plus ancestors. Working at the time for Gin Palace and the Bristol Bar, Mr. Warner was highly instrumental in the development of the delivery of PRISM, a programme for LGBT plus people affected by drug use, which was an award-winning venture for Bristol Drug Project. It is not at the moment clear what Michael's cause of death was. A spokesperson for Bristol Bear Bar spoke for many when he said, "Michael was the heart and face of BBB, Bristol Bear Bar. His warmth, humour, generosity touched many lives. Whether behind the bar or out among the crowd, he made everyone feel welcome, seen and valued. His spirit brought us together and his absence leaves a space that cannot be filled. He will be profoundly missed. But his memory and the joy he brought to our lives will live on. Rest in peace, Mike, our beautiful friend. You were truly one of a kind."
Pink News reports that the Lamkin Institute, which studies extremist behaviour and the denial of rights, humanities and freedom, has flagged the UK government and opposition parties, together with feminist fringe groups, as displaying many of the prerequisites of a genocidal witch hunt. Reporting for Pink News, Amelia Hansford said, "The Lamkin Institute argued that continued attacks against the community speak to a broader process of erasure, bolstered by, quote, a media narrative that has fueled hostility to and debate about the humanity of trans and intersex people. We see evidence of genocidal intent and actions targeting these communities," the statement continues. The Lemkin Institute argued that in the 2 months following the recent Supreme Court decision, the situation had only worsened, pointing to EHRC Chair Baroness Kishwa Faulkner's comments that neither she nor the Supreme Court believe that trans people have a right to privacy. "All of the actions described above fit neatly into the ninth pattern of genocide," the report said. "Denial and of prevention of identity. Genocide does not only manifest in the killing of an entire group. In the case of trans and intersex people, genocide is often perpetrated by making it impossible for individuals to exist as their true selves," they concluded.
The far-right-wing Daily Mail newspaper has come under fire this week after throwing a tantrum over controversial remarks about Israel made by punk rock band performing at the recent Glastonbury Festival. The band, called Bob Villain, had tried to incite concertgoers to call for the death of Israeli troops involved in the current Middle Eastern concert. While this offended many people, the Mail demanded that the BBC be somehow punished for allowing the materials to air, even though it was transmitted live and was beyond the reach of the BBC technicians. Others noted that the Daily Mail's agenda is warped, advocating free speech for bigots and transphobes, whilst calling for the ruthless suppression of everyone it dislikes. The Mail is also a neo-fascist paper and nakedly supported the German genocidal manic Adolf Hitler right up until the outbreak of war in 1939.
Meanwhile, the Irish language rap group Kneecap, who have made remarks that the only good Tory is a dead one, have been defended by the organisers and other participants at the recently ended Glastonbury event. Kneecap were part of a long tradition of irritating the establishment, a tradition that dates back decades, perhaps, to the Pansy Records phenomena of the 1920s. Legendary Bristol band Massive Attack, alongside Fontaines DC, Pulp, Idols and dozens of others, signed a letter from the indie label Heavenly Recordings in support of artists' freedom of expression. "As artists, we feel the need to register our opposition to any political suppression of artistic freedom," it reads. "It's ironic," brought one gay man. "The Tories want to totally dehumanise trans people, and yet they get all defensive about an obvious joke to kill Tories," chant by a rock group. "Grow a thicker skin, Kemi Badenoch."
We stay with music and note that last weekend, the digital internet radio station News Radio, based here in Bristol, celebrated the queer music of the Harlem Renaissance, a flowering of black and gay culture during the 1920s, which involved poetry, the arts, prose, music and design. Langston Hughes, May Rainey and Gladys Bentley all featured in the special programme, which aired on the anniversary of the Stonewall Insurrection in 1969. People like Hughes and Bentley flaunted their radical sexuality and, in the latter case, helped to find African, Caribbean, lesbian, butch, femme cultural types. A welcome fresher for the students of the 1920s and of black culture in New York. The programme is available at Nudes Radio website for listening again.
The Times newspaper called exasperation amongst German transgender people on Monday after it tried to suggest that the German chess world was, quote, up in arms after the victor in an un in an under 18 girls tournament was a transgender girl. The Times has been amplifying voices within German chess, calling for only assigned at birth girls to be allowed to compete. But what are they afraid of in an intellectual, not physical sport? That trans girls are better than them? Well, those are questions posed by trans advocates this week.
Staying with Germany, in cable news Deutsche Welle reports that in the very week of Sebastian Hefner's forgotten 1932 novel or romance set against the advent of Nazism has caused sensations around literacy circles, so the Chancellor backed a decision of the government coalition that the rainbow flag would not be flown above the Bundestag out of the German Parliament building. To add insult to injury, Chancellor Merz added that the Parliament was not a circus and would only fly the German tricolour and the EU flag. The decision not to raise the flag at Parliament was criticised by opposition parties, the Environmentalist Greens and the Social Left Party, among others.
Queer in the World, which networks and supports LGBTQ plus businesses, reports on a great new addition to the literary world in small town Illinois. Rubber Rose Books and Print is a women and queer-owned business that strives to create an environment where everyone feels welcome. They say that they proudly provide the widest selection of gently used books in Kankakee County. They go on to say, "Every nook of our shop is filled with items of interest that you are unlikely to find anywhere else. We carry books by local authors and host small events to promote community engagement. Our focus is on affordability, inclusivity and queer accessibility, of course."
And finally, bisexual Asian hero Freddie Mercury features on the front page of the Radio Times and TV Guide, both UK television listing magazines. The appearance is ahead of several programmes that will mark the 40th anniversary of Live Aid on the 31st of July 1985. A huge audience of tens of millions of people watched the dual concerts in Philadelphia and London, at which the great and good of rock music performed for free to raise cash for the famine that hit Ethiopia. There are several key queer links with Live Aid. First of all, the idea for a mega concert came from Boy George. After performing on the charity single Do They Know It's Christmas in November 1984, George was struck by his fans by an emotional response to it at live gigs that he was making. He phoned Bob Geldof and said, "You need to do a live concert." At Live Aid itself, many acts gave of themselves, but one dominated. Queen were, by 1985, considered rock dinosaurs by some, but Freddie Mercury had practice, and he had the band rehearse as soon as he was booked for the slot. The result was a scene-stealing performance that showed Queen at their pompous, outrageous best. Live Aid is particularly remembered for the show-stealing performance and the magical interaction between the audience and the band. Sadly, it was also the high point of Queen's career, in that Freddie's illness through HIV would bring an end to the amazing group over the next 7 years. Freddie died in 1991, but the band have continued with Adam Lambert filling in for the giant of rock.
Now, what's that you say? You're sick of the Daily Mail and need more queer news? Well, we're here to give it to you. Why not check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt? And we should be here next week at the same time. For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
And a Darren Jenkins.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
David Guetta and Bebe. Repsa, I'm good. And of course, the bracketed bit is blue. Right, we're going to take you back to the year of 1857. We're joined by Niall Morjani. I hope I've pronounced your surname correctly.
Yeah, bang on, actually. Whoa. A close friend accidentally called me Niall Morangi the other day, and then so you're grand, you've nailed it.
Now, please tell us, because it's quite a serious issue, this, isn't it? And how how have you gone about representing that on as a production?
So yeah, so Kampo 1857 is a play that is a retelling of the Indian uprising of 1857. The Indian uprising saw hundreds of thousands of Indians try to throw off British rule. As many uprisings are, it was quite bloody, quite violent. There were very significant episodes of sort of intense violence on either side, but particularly coming from the British, unsurprisingly. But the British love to focus in on one specific episode in a place called Kampo, where the violence sort of was at its height from an Indian to British perspective. And so in tackling that, I've tried really hard as a writer to tell the story in a way that has as much levity in it as possible. It's sort of satirizing the British mindset of colonial rule as much as possible through a character who is just called the British officer, and that's played by Jonathan Oldfield, who's also co-directing the show with me. And so there's a lot of jokes and levity in it, but then that sort of gives way into a space where things become a lot more intense, and the frame is the British officer is interrogating my character, an Indian rebel, asking what their role in the uprising was. So trying to hold it with levity, but when it becomes important to give the weight that the subject deserves, like really sitting in that, and it is tough. There's no shying away from the fact that that the uprising was very tough, and British rule was very tough for Indians as well. So yeah, just trying to hold those things together at once. But there are jokes in it, crucially. There are hard moments and there are funny moments, and I think that's really important. And like, you know, all of these things, tough moments in life often come with levity. So trying to capture hopefully the reality of that while sort of doing it in a silly and playful way, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does make sense. It sounds incredibly interesting, but also a very important part of history to tell people. And I was sort of wondering, how did this come about? What inspired you to get to this point where you're putting this production on? Where did the idea come from?
So the idea came from sort of multiple angles. I studied the episode of like the Indian Uprising at university. I did history, and I was sort of blown away by the fact I hadn't learned any Indian history, despite being half Indian in school. And I hadn't learned about the British Empire in anything but a positive light. And particularly I don't sound Scottish anymore, but particularly as a Scottish person growing up, it was very like industrious Scots abroad. And there's a monument to the Indian Uprising outside Edinburgh Castle that I stumbled across a few years later that remembers the fallen Highland soldiers that fought in the conflict, but obviously none of the Indians that hundreds of thousands of Indians that died in the British hands after. And then with everything that's happening in Gaza right now, it really twigged parallels between the two episodes and events. And as artists, I think we should be doing as much as we can, and you sort of go like, what is the thing I can do? And I noticed that when I talked about the Indian uprising to people, even if they had never heard of it before, which most people haven't, they were very pro the Indian uprising and going, yeah, let's get rid of British rule. But if I was speaking about, you know, Palestinian resistance in its multiplicity of forms, people would suddenly a lot more, they found that so much harder to get either on board with or even talk about. And I was like, okay, what can I do to that at least generates conversation and uses a moment in the past? So it's not the story of what's happening in the Middle East right now, but there are parallels because colonialism like is a system that still exists and the same sort of things manifest. But I was like, I want to tell an Indian story that isn't well known in Britain, and that the British were directly involved in, particularly from the Scottish angle, that will also twig people's brains to start thinking, hopefully, even if it just starts thinking about what's happening in Gaza right now, that would be great. So that was sort of where the drive to put the show together came from.
Wow. So you've mixed something so important that happened in history to something that is happening now to sort of spur on that conversation, or maybe actually to start people thinking about something that they don't have any understanding of in this moment, which they're going to get when they come to see your show, which is fantastic. I really love the sort of the merging of both comedy, music and history. Is that something you also feel really passionately about?
100%. The combination of different art forms in this piece felt really sort of organic and natural. At my core, I'm a storyteller, and that sort of thing once upon a time around a campfire vibes, but for adults and for kids, but this is very much for adults. And I initially saw this as a storytelling show. I started working with Jonathan on it, who's directed comedians. I really knew that this was a heavy topic and I wanted levity to play a big role in it. And I love satire and I love comedy. And suddenly it was like, okay, so this is starting to feel a lot more theatrical. The British officer's role, who's interrogating my character, getting them to tell the story, suddenly became just as interesting to me as a writer as my role was. And so very quickly we were like, okay, so this is some sort of synthesis between storytelling, theatre and story. I work with live music a lot in my work outside of this show. And it very quickly we were like, we need live music to elevate this. Wildly, in 1857, when Indian rebels were strapped to cannons in front of crowds forced to watch, which is the frame of the show, that's where my character starts, there were live musicians who were asked to play by the British officers. So there were tabla players or sitar players playing alongside these. They were made into entertainment. So Sodhi, who is our tabla player, who's absolutely incredible, sort of represents, again, an elevated theatrical moment in this synthesis of music, storytelling, theatre, but then also is speaking to something that really happened historically, which to me is heartbreaking and very artistically interesting in equal measure. So it felt really important to try and represent those three things in one. So yeah, it's been a really fascinating project artistically to work on.
I think looking at TV, I think one of the things that highlighted that mix of humour and seriousness was the TV series called MASH, which was dealing with something very serious and brutal as the Korean War. But they managed to put comedy in amongst it. And I think that what you're trying to do, though people might think, oh, how'd you put comedy in something that was so traumatic to a nation like yours of India? And you think, how can you put comedy into that? But it does work, because when things get serious and people are struggling, they tend to use humor just to break that moment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately, when you look at British colonialism and colonial rule, so much of it and the intellectual frameworks in particular that underpinned it and justified it to British people are absurd, and they're laughably absurd. And obviously you're doing that with a deep knowledge of the fact that these things are still very, very relevant and going on in society today, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be mocked and doesn't mean that we shouldn't laugh at them. And I think you're completely right. You know, Blackadder Goes Forth did an exceptional job of satirizing the First World War, which is one of the bleakest moments in human history. Like, but it was ridiculous. And so we should mock it. It's another way of criticizing power and critiquing power, is to laugh at it and to mock it. And I think that's really important. And for me, in the show, it's very important as well that Jonathan's character is quite funny and likable. And so I want audience members to, because we're dealing with Western audiences, I want audience members to relate to his character up front, because I'm asking them to also reflect on how, you know, they might exist in society. And, you know, a lot of this comes from me as a person of color as well, and how I feel as a person of color, and how I'm expected to tell my stories of like experiencing racism or pain or trauma or whatever, and how much trauma I'm wanted to, like, people want me to put in because it's exciting and it's engaging, but then also the way that it should be framed, and to mock that mindset and the absurdity again that somebody who hasn't lived your life or doesn't have your lived experience thinks they know how to tell your story better than you. And so John's character, again, that's great to mock. And you know, there's so many things to laugh at, basically. So as much, you're completely right. It's very heavy subject matter. It doesn't mean you can't make
fun. It sounds like an incredibly immersive experience. And it's been so amazing to listen to what got you to this point. But coming towards the end of the interview, amazingly, that's gone by so quickly. So could you tell our lovely listeners when you're performing and where and how to get in touch or how to find you on social media?
My Instagram handle is at Niall Morjani. I'm the only one of me on Instagram. You can find me very easily, or you can follow the Pleasance Theatre as well, because we're going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival for the full run at the Pleasance Theatre in Pleasance Beneath at 3:40, pretty much every single day, apart from the 12th and 13th. The show's 1 hour long. It's very explosive, very dynamic, very entertaining. It flies by. So come on down and check it out. And I'm sure I know we're doing some dates in London in November at the Pleasance Theatre, and I'm really hoping we'll be on tour after that. So if you're thinking, I can't get up to Edinburgh, it's very expensive, that's very reasonable. I know that more than anyone. But hopefully we'll be coming to a town near you at some time soon.
Well, it sounds amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. And we hope it goes absolutely brilliantly for you. Best of luck.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Bye for now.
Bye for now. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, 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 hello. That was your voice on there, wasn't it not?
All I heard was a very plummy, lummy voice doing a lovely interview.
Yeah, very indeed. Nice, very professional.
Now, with a wonderful person.
Before we go on to our usual chat, I want to point people to a Facebook post that I did earlier today about biology.
Oh.
I don't know whether you want to read any out, do you?
Oh, crikey, I've closed the page. Okay.
Anyway, I just wish I could remember, because it's such a good pushback to people who just say it's black and white, you know, XXXY, because that's absolutely not the case. And I am going to get a biologist on this show to go through it.
If you want me to read a bit, I will.
Go on then.
So, Rebecca Helm, a biologist and an assistant professor at the University of North Carolina, Asheville, USA, wrote, "Friendly neighborhood biologist here. I see a lot of people are talking about biological sexes and gender right now. Lots of folk make biological sex seem really simple. Well, since it's so simple, let's find the biological roots, shall we? Let's talk about sex, baby." I put the bit on at the end. And then she just explains about chromosomes. So if you know a bit about biology, you'll probably say that biological sex is caused by chromosomes XX, and if you're female, apparently it's XY. And you know, oh, hang on, XX you're female, XY you're male. I did that on purpose. This is chromosomal sex, but is it biological sex? And that's the question, isn't it? No, the answer is no. And then she goes on from that, and it's incredibly interesting. She just explains everything that all TERFs need to genuinely read, because this is not a debate. This is what angers me about when people are like, oh, I have an opinion. Okay, but what facts, what knowledge are you basing this on? You know, because we can go back 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 700 years and you're still wrong. So where is the water you're treading.
They're tired of experts.
That they've never listened to an expert. They're not interested. But science, in my humble correct opinion, will always win. That's what I've always been interested in: facts, science, history. And it doesn't matter how I identify. For me personally, what matters is what is true. And bigotry is not true. And it shall not win, because it just isn't valid.
No, it's not. And the facts of biologists, what makes me quite sick, really, is that the Supreme Court didn't have any biologists or trans organisations actually in defence.
They obviously
didn't want the facts.
No.
They actively push back against any sort of representation.
They did. Well, and yet, look at India. Yeah. They've just come out and said a trans woman is a woman.
Fantastic.
You can't.
Wait, what? A trans woman is a woman?
The Supreme Court, the Supreme Court in India has said that you cannot define a woman as somebody who gives birth. Because obviously there's quite a lot of women who cannot.
Yeah. I'm assigned female at birth. I won't ever give birth. You know, what about women that are born without wombs?
Yeah,
indeed. Without ovaries.
Well, and intersex.
And intersex people.
TERFs kicks, and the Supreme Court have kicked so many people under the bus.
Yeah.
Just to get at the few thousand who have got a gender recognition certificate.
Yeah.
They're even fighting back against the terminology, because there was the newsreader who changed a quote as she read it live on air last week. Saying the quote was something like "people who give birth," she changed it to "women who give birth." Yeah.
Martin Croxall, is it the newsreader?
I'm not sure.
I don't know that one. No.
But there are people who give birth. Like, wow, it's quite incredible. On a very different note, because we're running out of time. Guess what it is?
It's Pride.
What?
Yay! Yeah.
Yes.
1 week.
Pick up your programmes now. They're available at coffee shops, libraries. Yeah. Community centres across the city.
Absolutely. Who are you looking forward to seeing, Darren?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah. Everyone. You know, I've never made it to the cabaret stage.
Are you going to be on the march?
No, I'm going to be up with Andy in the
Downs. Oh, so you're going to the studio. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're going to see them all. Right. Brooklyn Heights as well.
Yes.
Because she slays.
She does slay.
I hope she does one of those twirls where it does a costume change into it.
Oh, my goodness, I would love that.
Yeah, that would be slay the house down. Or the tent down, I should say.
Yeah, house, tent.
There's no house.
No.
The boots are off.
I'm really looking forward to Cascada. I really am.
Yeah, bangers.
Yeah.
Every time we touch, get a bit of taste for you there, guys. Get into it.
It's going to be fine. I can't wait. I'm very aware Stephanie's looking at me like,
shush, yeah. We have to end the show.
You haven't got a show. Yeah, not yet. But now you have.
All right.
Right, we're done. We're complete. We're out of here.
But I don't want to go yet.
Time is tight, RB.
Oh, just like a nuts.
La 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 la.
Okay. But we will be back.
Same time, same channels.
Until then, go check out shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Until then, take care. Stay cool. Stay safe. Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.